someplace there's got to be a place where people are free to discuss what they know and what they don't know and to find out what they can.
Radioactive Waves is presented by the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History. Together, we will explore all things atomic, nuclear, and radioactive, along with some interesting surprises from our museum's collections and connections.
Hello, welcome to the podcast. My name is Anna Part, and I am here today with two people. We've got, of course, my co-host, as always,
David Gibson. Hello.
And today we actually have a special guest. He's agreed to come in and talk to us a little bit about his expertise in statistics, Dr. Milo Shield. He's a consultant at the University of New Mexico. He has a PhD in space physics from Rice University. Gonna fit in real well here at the museum. Shield is a fellow of the American Statistical Association, the U.S. coordinator for the International Statistical Literacy Project, and he is the president of the National Numeracy Network. Yeah, welcome.
Glad to be here.
We're really excited about this. Do you want to talk a little bit about the class that you are developing for UNM?
Two things. Yeah, I want to talk about the class, and then I want to use the approach that the students might use to talk about nuclear radiation, nuclear power, et cetera. Because our world is just drowning in statistics, social statistics. Everybody's got numbers. And it's like, how do you evaluate numbers? You're not a PhD. You don't have time to do research. What can you do in your mind pretty quickly, pretty simply? No formulas, no algebra, but you want to understand and evaluate. And that's where I want to start, is with this course at the University of New Mexico. The university is a pioneer. I had no idea about New Mexico, but they looked around and said, our regular statistics course just doesn't prepare people for social conversation. If it's balls and urns, we can do it. But that's not what we talk about. Disparities, discrimination, climate, everything, and everybody's got statistics. We want a course on evaluating everyday statistics. And so that's why I'm here. They have put this course together. It's in the catalog. It satisfies a mathematics requirement in the core curriculum. It satisfies a mathematics requirement in the New Mexico general education curriculum. The Taos campus, the Valencia campus are both looking at adopting this. Valencia is expecting to run it out this spring. This is a new experience because it is different. Less than 30% overlap with a traditional course. And so the statisticians, you know, this word statistics has a problem.
It's hard.
I was talking with my dad and he said, statistics. Sadistic. No, no, Dad. No, it's not sadistics. So we're dealing with pretty simple things. Let me give you an example. Well, the first thing the students learn is that statistics are different from numbers. They say, well, we know numbers. One and one is two. Not in statistics. Let's talk about buddy math. One bunny plus one bunny can give you more than two bunnies.
Let's talk about potential bunnies.
Potential, certainly. Okay. Or oftentimes they're actual little bunnies.
All right.
Whereas I take one ice cube out of the refrigerator and take another ice cube out of the refrigerator and I lay it in the counter, and after a while I've got zero ice cubes. This is ice cube math.
Okay.
The reality makes a difference.
Okay.
And that's hard to fight when you've had 12 years of math where one and one is two.
Yeah.
Right.
So lies, you don't have to lie with statistics. There's just a lot of flexibility. To me, they're like words. They happen to involve numbers. The second thing we learn is that these reality-based statistics can be influenced. You said, well, give me an example. Do you realize that people that read home and fashion magazines are more likely to get pregnant than people that read car and sport magazines? Now, you don't need a degree in sex ed to say it's not the magazine.
Right.
It's
the gender.
Yeah.
Now, if we took 100 people, 50 guys, 50 gals reading fashion and 50 guys, 50 gals reading sport, there wouldn't be much difference. The difference is the mixture underneath, and that's the story. So it's a true statement that people that read Home and Fashion more likely to get pregnant than people that read Car and Sport. But it's what the students call a crude association. The story is underneath. It's just like people. They say things, but there's a story behind it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You got to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Only we're doing it with numbers. And that's different for these students. It's like, is this a math class?
Yeah.
Let me try another example. The best hospital in town.
Mm.
I'll bet it has the highest patient death rate.
Because
there's
the
more patients
biggest?
There.
There's two things. It's the biggest. No, this is per patient. When we say rate,
okay.
We've already rate? Done okay. it per okay. 100.
Okay. Sure.
But what did you say?
I would just say, I was thinking a higher volume also.
Okay. But it's the best hospital, right? Which kind of patients are they going to get? The good ones or the sick ones? The
sickest ones, yeah.
That's the story underneath the statistics. Once you realize, yeah, it's the best hospital, it's the worst hospital.
Right.
Depends on what you take into account. And so these students are learning that little phrase, take into account. We do it in our personal life.
Yeah,
the person's
yeah.
really nice. Once you take into account their family background, their hazards they've had in
the
life,
terrible day
the challenges,
et cetera.
Sure.
We do it all the time, but we've never done it with numbers.
Hmm.
And mathematically, this isn't taught until after calculus. It's called differential equations, partial and total derivatives.
Okay.
But we're teaching it to art and film and music
yeah,
majors.
Yeah.
Using weighted averages.
See, I...
That's awesome.
...am so jealous. I had to... I was required to take two math classes for my undergrad degree from UNM in history. And I ended up taking statistics over the summer at CNM. And I won't name the professor because I don't want him getting in trouble. He was really cool. But he was like a higher level teacher, and he said there was a point in the class where he couldn't figure out how to dumb it down enough for us. And so he said as long as we showed up and did our best, he would pass us. And so
that's the story underneath the story.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. So
I like that. I like that.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
fact that there is this class that can be so interdisciplinary. This is something that we can use in history. This is something that I would be able to use that would be useful to my degree and my career. And having that as an option is so cool. That's really awesome.
And that's my background. I came into statistics from critical thinking, where it was about arguments, and
yeah.
you're dealing with students in non-quantitative majors, history, philosophy, political
mm-hmm.
science. That's who this course is designed for.
That's excellent. I'm so glad. I'm glad you're doing this, because this is going to mean, I mean, this is going to mean people who aren't even going to use it in their careers are going to be more able to understand the news.
Well, that, and I think that they will, even if they don't think they're using it in their careers, they'll understand, oh, well, I was actually using those concepts that I had learned, and they'll understand, okay, well, I can apply these because... Now I understand, you know, as you say, you may not be using those numbers on the surface, but these are applying to something that I didn't even know that this applied to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
The healthy skepticism anytime there's some, you know, figure that is
It's interesting you mentioned
you.
That. I do a lot of surveys, and I ask students when they come in, as to numbers and statistics, would you say you're pretty trusting, naive? Over here, or at the other extreme, it's like, I don't trust any of those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You're a total cynic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ask the same students at the end, where are you with, in the middle, the critical thinker? And I can see movement from both sides toward the center.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the goal.
Yeah.
It's not, do you pass the test? You can memorize. I've done it. Memorize, regurgitate, and forget.
Right.
But what are you going to take with you that you're going to use? That's the goal, is to be more discerning about these numbers and to be able to ask questions. To me, that's another goal of the course that I don't have in the final. I've been a consultant. I've seen top executives. I can't say that they're smarter than the average manager. The one thing I've noticed, they're more willing to ask questions. Even sometimes questions that seem stupid, like in an accounting thing. Now, what's this credit and debit stuff? And you're going, you're the executive and you don't know credit and debit? But then they'll ask another simple question and the room goes quiet. And it's like, oh my God, we should have thought of that. Oh, that's why they're there and we're here.
Exactly, yeah.
So getting the students, and I tell them, you're college students. You're not stupid, you're ignorant. And there's a big difference. A big difference, there's a lot. But you go to college, you realize the world's bigger than you ever realized.
Yep.
And that's why I need to put in a plug for the museum right here.
There you go.
Why I'm
anytime
here.
You want to do that. You can use
why I'm here is because I'm supportive of any organization or institution that's supporting the human mind. And to me, nuclear power, that whole thing is just a testimony to what the human mind can do. Mm-hmm. It's incredible to go from not knowing anything about atoms to all of a sudden, now we've got ways of fighting cancer cells, et cetera. It's just jet planes, all sorts.
And over such a short historic period of time.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is really, it's a new science. This is a baby science. And for it to have made the leaps that it's made in this short amount of time.
Yes. Yeah, it's incredible. So I really support what you're doing. And that's one reason I signed up as a member, because I wanted to support this organization.
Awesome. Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for that. Your membership is actually what helps support this podcast. So we're very happy that you wanted to do your own plug, because we're gonna plug at the end too.
Yeah, that lets us get in here and do this. Yes.
The people who support us.
No, I think it's important for all the people of the mind to continue to support those organizations that help develop the mind in kids. In school, we were just talking earlier, and I mentioned how getting involved with electronics got me involved in physics and on to a PhD in physics. It's little things at the beginning that can make such a big difference. So I really support your activities with kids.
Awesome.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. We're really excited to hear what you have to say about the nuclear industry, too.
Well, let me do a few more minutes on this course.
Yeah, please. Definitely. No, I'm fascinated.
And I've taken a lot of courses, and I've forgotten most of what I heard. And I thought, okay, Milo, what do you want the students to remember in two words or less? One of the oldest human admonitions. You admonish somebody, you know. The oldest one I know of that we use all the time is take care. Take care. That is ancient. At that time, I mean, we may think our world is chaotic and uncertain, but compared to what it was at prior times, history major, it may have been even more chaotic, you know. And so I use that as the scaffold for the course, where each of the four letters in care happens to relate to what I call the four kinds of influence on a statistic. The R stands for the randomness. That's in the regular course with the balls and the urns and so forth, and we do a little bit with that. And the E stands for error. People may not tell the truth. It's a kind of error, or they may misremember. Or, you know, the questions may be really set up to get a particular answer, and that creates an error. So those are the two in the traditional course. It's the first two, the C and the A, that are central to this statistical literacy course. C stands for confound. The word confound appears in the Bible. In the Old Testament, when they were building this tower to heaven, and in the King James Version, it says God confounded their speech. confused. I ask my students, have you ever used the word?
Nobody.
Have you ever seen it? Oh, maybe. Where did you see it? Typically on the sports page.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
The pitcher confounded the batter.
Yep.
You'll see it on the business page. Tesla confounded the experts on earnings. Confused. We're using it a little more in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the magazines and pregnancy. What was confusing there? It was the gender.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was the confounder. Mm-hmm. And so students are learning about these things that can influence statistics. And they, oh, that's a confounder. Well, what are the ways we have of controlling for that, handling that, et cetera? And the second one, which is actually bigger, is what I call assembly or assumptions, how things are put together. So let's say I'm a superintendent of a high school, and I'm the principal. My boss, the superintendent, comes in and says, we've got too much bullying here, Shield. I don't know what you're going to do, but you're going to fix it. I want bullying to decrease. And I'm thinking, oh, geez. They're monitoring the statistics on the bullying incidents, and I got to cut those numbers. Oh, teacher training, is there any way I can do it? The light bulb goes on. I'm going to redefine bullying. In the past, we defined bullying as physical violence or the threat. I'm going to change that. How can I cut it? Well, it's not just the threat. I need to see an actual wound, a mark or scar, something like that. I need to decrease it more. You've got to go to the nurse's office and have it signed by somebody. I want to decrease it more. You have to be taken to the emergency room. We're getting rid of bullying.
Right.
It's the simplest way to play with the statistics is change the definition. And so when you hear a statistic, immediately you're saying, I wonder if they kind of nudged the definition to get what they wanted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we call this hypothetical thinking because you weren't there, and oftentimes the news story doesn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're thinking, they've got a motive. Everybody's got a motive.
Yeah.
Right.
Good people, bad people, we all have a motive. Yep. That's not the problem. It's did you use that to set the statistics up to support your point of view?
My daughter, when she was in junior high,
yes,
she was required to do a science project. And so we were going over, you know, I'm a science-y kind of guy. But she said, I want to do like a social science project. Okay. And she came up with statistics. She said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get some hot button issues. These are, I mean, it was you know, the president at the time, pro-choice, things like that, real hot, hard topics. And she said, I'm going to go and I'm just going to stand on the corner and I'm going to ask people what they think and I'm going to get the answers to these questions. And I said, okay. I said, well, where's the science? She says, I'm going to do it at two places. I'm going to do it at UNM campus. And then I'm going to do it out in front of calibers, the gun range, and asking the exact same questions in the exact same way, handing a paper, not leading anything. Not surprisingly, she got wildly varying numbers to the exact same questions presented the exact same way. And she said, you can go out in front of Burger King and ask people what their favorite burger is, and they're probably going to say a Whopper. You can go out and this is, you know, in junior high. And so you're asking the same question, but like you say, there is that other factors.
Context.
Confounding of it by saying, okay, yes, but where did you ask these? And you know, what was the demographic of the people that were asked these questions? And she presented it. She got an A on that one. But but no, it was you know, neat to kind of see in real life. Well, these are questions that you hear, like very hot button things, which first I thought she was pretty brave as a junior high to go out and ask these questions. So we on these two very different areas, we got two very different things, even though they were the same questions. I thought that was a pretty interesting introduction to statistics for her, yeah.
It's interesting, Anna, that I heard you mention the word context.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what this course is about.
Mm.
Statistics are numbers in context,
mm-hmm.
and the context matters. I say the statistics are like the tail on a dog.
Mm.
It's the dog that does the wagging.
Right.
That's the context. And the numbers jump around depending on that. But most people go for the numbers. When you check out at the supermarket, there it is. Lose 21 pounds in 8 days. I mean, you've got to have numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We're suckers for numbers because we've had 10, 12 years where numbers are facts.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. And we try to treat them like they were, you know, etched in stone. And that's not what this course is about. Mm-hmm. So what I tell the students after they've done all this other stuff is, what are 3 or 4 questions you can ask of any topic, such as nuclear power, nuclear radiation? First, you got to ask some general questions about, you know, what is it, and understand it. But when it comes to the numbers, one of the first ones you might ask is, well, how big? I've analyzed hundreds of news stories. About half of them don't give you a measure of how big the effect is. Mm-hmm. Women that eat nuts have fewer health problems. How many nuts? How many fewer? We didn't say. But that grabs your attention. Mm-hmm. And that's your first thing. Usually if they don't give you a number, it's because it's small. If it was big, they'd tell you.
Right, they'd be happy to post that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so that's your first clue of what they don't say.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is, compared to what? Because I can pick the compared to make something look small. I can pick the compared to make something look big.
Mm-hmm.
And then your third one, let me just make sure. Oftentimes it's a ratio. I got into this one listening to President then Trump talking with a news person about COVID deaths. And Trump was talking about COVID deaths per 1,000 tests.
Mm.
And the news person was saying COVID deaths per 1,000 people per capita.
Those are very different.
And what's more important, they can give you a different direction in the association.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this. There are 2 states, I think it was Michigan and Rhode Island, mm-hmm. that on Trump's basis, one of them was higher. On the news person's basis, the other was higher. And that's where it really hits,
is the
what I call the diabolical denominator. We all had denominators someplace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's diabolical because it's so innocent. It's, you don't even think about it.
You don't notice the...
And actually, in that case, what you really want is something different than either of those two. What you would like to have is per infection.
Right.
Yeah,
but we don't have that.
That's not information.
But once you know that's
right.
the goal, then you argue, well, is test closer to infection or is it per person?
Mm-hmm.
And you can begin to argue as a history major. You're familiar with arguments.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
But now you've got something to work toward, and you realize these other are imperfect measures of something you're trying to get at. And to me, you're using your mind, and that's what the course is about.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's really great.
So what I wanted to do was kind of come at this whole topic of nuclear, whether it's nuclear power, nuclear radiation, kind of the way I would expect students to do it, knowing about ZIP.
Mm.
First of all, the first rule is you don't use any numbers with units that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not using REM or RAD or any of those things. Ideally, percentages.
Okay.
And so we want to talk about, well, how, or just counts.
Uh-huh.
Percentages
uh-huh.
and counts, it's like I can handle those as a student. And so there's this nuclear power thing, and I've seen scary stuff on it, you know. I might just say, well, had there been any people that have died from it? Well, yeah. Well, how many in the last year? Pretty quiet.
Right.
Well, how many in the last 2 or 3 years, pretty quiet. Well, I heard about this big thing over in Japan. Wasn't that a nuclear thing? Yeah, yeah. Did people die from the nuclear thing? I think I would have heard about it if they had.
It's kind of
and
know.
That depends on
not
how the question
yet.
Is asked.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with radiation.
And then,
not yet.
And but not from the blast and so forth. Then I begin to distinguish, there's back to this nuclear. There's the nuclear explosion and there's the nuclear radiation, and they're two different things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to ask, more nuanced questions, but I'm starting with, how big is it? And let's say there have been some deaths, and certainly over time there have been deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, compared to what? Because the easy way to knock down nuclear power, nuclear radiation, is to say it's not safe, meaning perfectly safe.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the choice of the comparison right there, is perfection. And you want to say, well, what would you consider perfectly safe in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you start asking the question. You consider driving your car perfectly safe?
Definitely not in Albuquerque.
Okay. Or flying? Well, that's safer, maybe. Mm-hmm. But is it perfectly safe? And it's like, I don't think you really have anything to offer that's perfectly safe. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be perfectly safe lying in bed?
No.
Not even that, maybe. A meteor strikes or something.
I had
like
an old roommate statistically, whose roof fell on her head.
A lot of people die in bed.
Really?
The roof fell in on her.
Yeah. She had it coming at that point. I mean, don't know. Yeah.
So it's getting crazy. Students to be able to ask the deft but pertinent questions. When you say safe, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that can really put people back a bit.
Right.
Or compared to what? So I understand that there's radiation around us all the time. And I never thought about that before. And I'm wondering, do I need to wear a lead-based suit, like those astronauts or something like that? So what's normal would be maybe my next question. And I wouldn't understand the units if you started giving me the units.
I'd
be curious to know where the stuff comes from. And so, and I have to give a plug for the person that set this up, Jeffrey Mann, who I met at the Einstein event, sponsored by you people.
Right.
Started talking to me about nuclear radiation, and being a physics major, I was interested. And so I've been asking him some of these questions, and he gave me a breakdown, and I found it fascinating. He said that about 5% of the radiation comes from the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
5% comes from the ground. I'm still waiting for the big ones. He said 15% comes from inside your own body.
Yep.
I said, really? I didn't know that. You mean I'm radioactive? If you put a radioactive Geiger counter up next to me, and it might go off?
If you've got the sensitivity levels,
very
yes.
weak.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, but where's the big one? Well, there's medical. I mean, when I was a kid, you got your shoes looked into by a machine, et cetera.
We've got one of those.
Yes.
Not working, but.
But I'm saying these don't add up to even half. Where's the big one? Radon, about 60%. And I'm thinking, well, I don't see people dropping over dead from this stuff. I haven't heard that we have to carry things around. Does that mean it's just so weak? Not necessarily. Well, what does our body do when it gets irradiated with this stuff? And he said, it fixes it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, really? I never learned that part.
Right.
So the body can handle a certain amount of radiation, and you live to be 100 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, this is an average. And in the statistics class, you are aware that an average, you can drown in a river that's 2 feet deep on average.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I said, how much variation is there in the United States? It seems like Colorado, northern New Mexico, has some of the highest radon levels. Down near the oceans on the Atlantic and Pacific coasts, it's maybe 10 or 20% less.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, that isn't much variation. So I asked Jeffrey, how about the world? Oh, yes. He had some places, he said, in Brazil.
Brazil.
Mm-hmm. We've got a spot that's maybe five times our average.
Whoa.
And over in Iran, there's a place that's like 10 times our average. And then there's a third place someplace else, maybe I think it's back in Brazil, where it's like 50 times our average. Let's just go for 20 because I don't have the number. And I thought, and we don't have reports of people falling over or babies with two heads or anything like that. To me, that means the body must be able to handle a pretty wide range of variation. And I don't hear that.
Yeah.
Right.
They just tell you there's radiation.
Yeah.
And they give a number that means nothing to me. But if you compare it to what the body can handle, that's what I'm interested in.
Well, and obviously, there are people who still live in the Chernobyl exclusion zone. Are they doing super great? I've heard not. But they live there and have for a generation or two now. Like, it's not... That is where they live, and that's how they live their lives.
Well, it's one of the things I'll teach, you know, kind of basic radiation classes to the younger students. And, you know, I'll whip out the Geiger counter and you fire it up, and sure enough, you're getting that background radiation, and they're like, oh my goodness, you know what, this is crazy, we're being radiated. And then I'll give them a source that, you know, I even provide a gamma source for them, and I show them, yes, this gamma can penetrate the skin, it can, you know, radiate those things, but you'll be okay. And I equate it to, you know, you fall and scrape your knee, what does the body begin to do immediately? That's heal. That's why when you're looking at shielding from radiation, you have time, distance, and shielding. But time is one, because you can be in for a little bit. You can be exposed to these larger numbers. You remove yourself from that, and you begin to heal. And it's just, you know, those that have gone through radiation therapies and things like that, you know, while they can be very sick at the time, you know, if it does end up, you know, curing or waylaying whatever it is it was, you'll recover from that radiation sickness, because the body begins to heal immediately. And radiation's the same way. And as you mentioned, you never hear that. You know, you just hear, oh, you know, you got radiated. That's it. It's all over, you know. And it's just not the case. It's a matter of, again, playing with those numbers just a little bit. You know, it's that story underneath, is that you will begin to heal. And, you know, radiation is scary because it's unknown, by the large population, and it's something new. And so you hear these numbers and they just don't add up. You know, it's like you said with two ice cubes, you know, pretty soon you got no ice cubes. It's the same thing with radiation.
Radiation has one bad side. Most of the stuff you hear about seems to be the harm. Even the killing of the cancer cells, that is a harm to those cells.
Yeah.
And so I asked Jeffrey, I said, is there any benefit? Because I think about things that are toxic that we consume every day. Water is toxic if I consume too much of it.
Right.
Metaphine or whatever. You know, you take too much of things, you can overdose. But, you know, there's a region I can get too much oxygen and die. But there's a region where it's beneficial. And I said, is there anything like that with radiation? And he said, well, I heard that there was somebody from the university here that was conducting an experiment in a salt mine locally here about raising plants in a radiation-free environment to see, did they do worse because they need the radiation? And so we contacted the person, and he said the results are kind of inconclusive on that. We were hoping they were testing mice or rats or rodents, something like that. But I wonder about that, because that's where my mind goes. Is there any benefit to what's going on here? And if there were, that would change people's opinion entirely.
Right, if you could
say. We may have been against microwaves until we needed it to cook supper.
Exactly.
And then it's like, it's okay.
Right, yep.
Well, one of the funny things about radiation is that in the history of how people have been using radiation, there was a while where we thought it was super great for you, that you wanna neck a bottle of Radithor, which is radium and thorium in triple distilled water. You do that. That's great for you. It's gonna give you vitality, and then
that healthy glow.
Yeah. Actually, we're probably gonna do an episode on that pretty soon, so I'll leave a little bit of a spoilers, but it's not a spoiler to say that that's not good for you. That said, you're right. There's got to be, I mean...
Jeffrey wondered if the springs that we go to that we feel good about, is it just the heat? Is it the water? Or is it possibly because they have a higher radon content and the radiation is what's making you feel better? I don't know any of this, but I wonder about these things.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I do a physical therapy treatment where basically they try to trigger the body to heal itself by almost like bringing attention to the fact that there's something wrong. And I wonder, you know, if the body is healing things, is it, it realizes that it needs to heal, it's going to be healing stuff that it didn't realize it needed to heal too. This is just all theory. This is not medical advice.
We're talking about the mind, and the mind wonders why or how or and could or
what ways we can use things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's kind of how the students in this class are taking on social issues, all sorts of things where they're not experts, but they're trying to ask decent questions that put things in perspective that they can manage. And if they can do that afterward, I would like to think our society might be better off.
Definitely.
Because right now I just feel like all we're doing is hurling numbers at each other, and there's no dialogue. I think back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates. We have farmers standing in fields listening to one person talk for 40 minutes.
Oh, my God.
And then the other person is scribbling notes on the back of an envelope, and they reply for 20 minutes. And then the first person comes back and talks for 20. We could not do that today.
Right.
No way.
And now we've got numbers.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So I think we have a critical thinking deficit, shortage. That, to me, is a big problem in our society.
Yeah.
And when you can't talk intelligently and make some progress on a mutual understanding, to me, that's a sign of a society that's headed down. And I don't want to see that. And so that's why I think this statistical literacy is so important, to try and raise the level of discourse to where we can kind of set some things aside and say, you know, we need to understand this part of it better.
Right.
So.
Or even even some of it that this discussion can be removed from the table, because even though it was sensationalized, you know what I mean? It was, as you say, it was, let me see the numbers. Maybe it was this small number of whatever it was that caused this big panic or this big, you know, argument usually about something. Maybe we don't even really need to be talking about this. Let's talk about something that does have more relevance to, you know, and like you said, this discourse or the level of discernment, if we can raise that, you know, to where you, because we're drowning in numbers, you know, we're drowning in numbers. And as you say, often contradictory numbers, you know, numbers that about the exact same thing, and you can flip to one station and flip to another and get polar opposite numbers that are technically fact. They're technically fact, but they're wrong. You know, and they're the real.
I wouldn't oftentimes say they're wrong. Well, I'm thinking like Trump and the newscaster. They were both talking about the same COVID deaths, but one was per capita, the other was per test. And they look like they're saying the same thing, but they aren't.
Right. Yeah, I guess not incorrect, just massaged.
It's the wrong.
Chosen,
Chosen. I love it. There you go. That's
assembled,
what I was after.
Et cetera.
Right.
But it's no different than words. We assemble words. When I go out on a first time, I happen to just mention the things that are good about myself. I may not mention any of the underlying problems, et cetera, in my life. We do it all the time. And thinking of numbers the same way as words and using the same critical thinking skills that you've developed with words for numbers, it's a whole new world.
That's awesome.
It's a new world. And the University of New Mexico is the only university in the world. And I really am an expert on what's going on in the world. I've given 30 talks overseas. I've got a website that's running 300,000 visitors a year.
Oh, wow.
I keep track of what's going on in the statistical literacy movement, et cetera. The University of New Mexico is number one in pioneering this as a regular course. Normally it's done as a topics course. One time, special deal, et cetera.
Yeah.
But no, to be a regular course, it has to have a textbook. It's got to have a structure. It's got to have something that faculty can review. It's got to have mathematics that the mathematics department can sign off on.
Mm-hmm.
And most math departments are quite hesitant because when we look at rigor, we think of a scale going up from algebra to calculus, differential equations, and up. And here's this course that isn't really using algebra. And one of the big questions for a math department is this mathematics?
Right.
But the president of the Mathematical Association of America, he argued that this is advanced thinking about mathematics, but the math itself is pretty simple. But this thinking we're doing is really what we want for quantitative reasoning, quantitative literacy, that we want all of our STEM majors, quants, to come away with, is the ability to think with numbers. And we're not certain that just teaching calculus and differential equations brings that about.
Yeah. Well, without that critical thinking, you also don't have the advancements. You won't have, you know, the next discovery, the next thing that we're going to find. The numbers are part of that, but that being able to use those numbers critically and the critical thinking is what brings about that new discovery, that new next whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, I think that's fantastic. I'm really blown away. I'm very jealous of all the undergrads right now because I would have loved to take this course. I think it would have been really helpful to me. Just I do history. That is what I do. I do not do math. I am very bad at math. Bad at timekeeping. Bad at math. But the thing is that even there's so much statistics that go into history too. The number of data records,
right?
That you get, and then you kind of like make something out of that, or somebody else has done a thesis about the percentage of people who died from the Black Plague,
right? Because it can put things in context.
It's one of these stories in the book. It's a picture. It's the death rate in Germany in the 1500s.
Okay.
Right after the Protestant Revolution, et cetera. And we looked at the different states, and we looked at the suicide rates. And they varied among the different states. But we looked at the state by what percentage of the population was Protestant. And we noticed that the death rate was higher the greater the share of Protestants. And we thought, well, that kind of fits what we know about Catholic mortal sin, not a good thing. Protestants don't say it's a good thing, but it's not a really big bad thing. And so we presume this data supports the idea that Protestants are more likely to commit suicide. Then we look at the death records and we realize the opposite is true. And the history major says, why is that?
Yeah.
And then they begin to think, supposing that the head of the noble of your group decides to go Protestant and you're Catholic. All the feast days are gone. All the events are gone. People are doing the Protestant thing and you're not changing. And you're not going to leave. Your family's been here. And finally, it's like, I want out. That's where looking at the statistics can support one story that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it may not be the real story.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. That's
fascinating. That's really, really interesting. I love that. I think that this is also something that you might be able to use in your classes. I don't know. But when you're talking about take care.
Yes.
The Latin word for a greeting is salve or salvate, which means take care or take health. Or be healthy. It's like a command to be well.
I'm going to look into that. Yes. Yeah. I like etymology and history and so forth. My wife's a history major. She's talking to me and saying, pay attention to this lady. She's good.
That's awesome.
Well, this was awesome. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Or
support any activity of the mind.
Okay.
I love it.
Otherwise, the world can go back on you. Yeah. And that would be, regardless of which side of issues we're on, if the mind isn't respected, if it isn't upheld and promoted, things can get worse than you can imagine.
Yeah.
I love it.
Keep up your good work.
That's a wonderful note. We appreciate that. Thanks again for coming in. We do want to say thank you to our
Atomic History patron members.
Help make this podcast possible. Thanks again for coming in. We really appreciate you. I've enjoyed this conversation. I'm going to go home and share it with my family before they get the sneak peek on this one. So I do appreciate you coming in. Thank you, Anna, for coming in.
Absolutely.
And as we end everything, don't forget to wash your hands.
Radioactive Waves has been presented by the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History. Join us next time for more interviews, histories, and insights on topics like the Manhattan Project, science and pop culture, the atomic age, and the differences between nuclear fact and fiction.